Welcome to Outreach Radio, Amplifying Voices, Inspiring the World. I'm your host, Alba Mireles, and I'm absolutely delighted to welcome today's guest, Sarah Gawait, the author of the books titled Sam at the Sea, The Sneaky Snacker, and the new one, Headphones Asthma. We're here to celebrate your creativity and explore the world you crafted in these books. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Alba.
So my first question will be, like, who is Sarah and what initially drew you in this world of writing?
Yeah, actually, I am a wife and homeschool mom of three. What I first wanted to write was actually in second grade when I had a friend of mine say that she wanted to write a book. Her older sister was publishing a book as like a sixth grader. And that's when I felt like this lightning bolt moment, like that's what I want to do. And I just would always write for fun. And then I forgot about that dream. And many, many years later, I just always go back to writing. I dabble in it. I think of publishing. And then just always kind of, I think fear of failure kind of held me back. But eventually, once I started learning enough and learning craft and writing and learning industry, I decided to jump right in and start my own publishing company to publish my works.
Well, and I think you have worn many hats, like an author, homeschooling mom, founder of a nonprofit. I saw that you also have that one. So quite a journey. And for the first book, your first book, I think, was Sam at the Sea, right?
Yes. What inspired me to write that book was I was volunteering with my son's kindergarten class, and I was teaching them gardening. And I just wanted to find a way to teach them the lesson of what makes plants grow that would be fun and a way that they would receive it well and learn it well. So I thought of this story initially as a puppet show, and it's an interfaith story on what's needed for a plant to grow. So it merges science and spirituality. But for the purpose of that day, I just went ahead and just taught them gardening. But I ran home and I wrote it down, and I wrote it in a day. And then I joined a critique group, and they helped me so much. I learned so much developmental editing from them. And that was my first book. And many years later, I published through under Soundheart Kids.
And with this book, what message were you most excited to share with young readers?
I want to share there's so many like lessons in the book about patience, and every kid wants to grow up and they want to grow up fast. But I wanted them to know that ultimately you do need God to grow. And there are, different elements that you need, nutrition and, water. So they learn the science behind it. But ultimately what makes the science work is ultimately God. And it's an interfaith story. And my intention was to unite or unify all three monotheistic faiths. So in the author's note, I quote the Torah, Bible, and Quran, showing what all three religions have in common, that God makes things grow.
And there is a story that you mentioned blends like science and, the interfaith faith elements. How did you approach including the Quran, Bible, in a kindly, friendly way for kids?
Yeah, well, in the story itself, I use the word God, but it's really in the author's note that I quote each one. There's a quote from the Torah and the Bible and the Quran, and that I had researched and found, and I ran it by pastors and a rabbi, just to make sure everything was okay to use in the correct way. But growing up, I grew up in I was raised Muslim, but my father was a chaplain in the U.S. Coast Guard, the Muslim chaplain in the U.S. Coast Guard. And so I grew up going to interfaith prayer breakfasts and in that interfaith space. So we were exposed to Bible verses and Torah verses pretty frequently. And we had copies of those books on our shelves. And we were, allowed to kind of look through and ask questions and read and ask questions of our parents. So I just wanted to. And in this time, we live in a very divisive time. And I just want to highlight that we actually have a lot more in common than we think. And to kind of highlight that, I think sometimes we just need a little reminding.
Okay, and you know, many authors draw inspiration from real life. Are there any personal experience that influenced the creation of the book?
Some I have the seed. I'd really just say my parents. You know, obviously, aside from the actual incident, the school that I dedicated the book to, Ilm Academy, where my kids actually had attended school, and that's where it inspired me for the story idea. But really, I think that was a culmination of my parents, both my mom and dad, who passed on now, but that the way they've brought me up to really think critically, ask questions, not to be afraid to learn about other faiths and engage in comparative religious study, you know, in my teen years. And I think that was really formative for me.
And in the book, The Sneaky Snacker, you use like a playful rhymes to teach, you know, nutrition. And what inspired the idea of the ninja snack, going from like this junk food junkie to health hero?
Yeah, that story idea was inspired during COVID. We were all like stuck in at home. And my youngest son, he was a real big sneaky snacker always. And I heard this little crinkling and crunching in the pantry. And I just knew, I was like, what are you doing? It was super late at night. And he was on all fours with like a cracker in his mouth, like running around like a cheetah. And I was like, oh my gosh, you are a sneaky snacker. You're such a sneaky snacker. And the first lines came to be in that moment. It was just like a lightning bolt moment. Again, it was like the sneaky snacker stole a cracker he couldn't help but eat. And then I ran to write it down. And then that whole night, I think I wrote it in pretty much one sitting, but it wasn't quite finished yet. It needed some more work, because, you know, rhyme is so hard. It's really hard to write and to make the story work along with the rhyme, because rhyme can be very limiting. But, you know, with a lot of help and classes and critique groups, I was able to get it to that point. And hiring editors for sure helped get the story to where it was, you know, where I could publish it.
And you know, in that book, I think you include educational and pages about food types. What was the thinking behind adding those features for both like kids and parents?
Yeah, actually, you know, really it was, I feel like we can't start too soon with educating our children on healthy food choices. And we don't want to give them a complex, but it needs to come from it needs to be very mindfully done. And I thought a funny story is a great way to start. And then it starts the conversation on what is a whole food, what's a processed food, and what's an ultra processed food, and what is best for my body. And I think, you know, you'd be surprised, kids actually can learn this at age 3. I've, you know, on author visits, I've taught 3-4-year-olds how to identify each, and where there's this activity where I bring all this food and they have to sort it in bins, and they get it. They learn like, wow, this is a really long list of ingredients, and just a bunch of funny looking words. This must be an ultra processed food. And then I have to really, if I'm going to choose to eat something from that, it's going to be very limited. And on occasion, because, you know, I'm a child of the 80s and 90s where we didn't know any better. The food industry had really, you know, all through all the advertising, the sugary cereals. I mean, we just grew up on just such a high sugar diet. And it wasn't until the 90s when people realized, oh my goodness, we're starting to see childhood diabetes, that people started sounding the alarm a little bit. But we're still, I think we've come a long way. But we still have a lot of work to do when it comes to educating our children.
Yeah, and these books helps, you know, for kids to learn a little bit, you know, to introduce the kids in this world, but not feel so overwhelmed about all the information. And, you know, there's another book, the Hamza story, and what inspired that story?
Yeah, I actually wanted to write, it was also inspired by one of my children that, you know, there's just, we have a lot of many neurodivergent people in our society. And I think I wanted to foster understanding, like people, you know, need to know why some kids wear headphones in the classroom or at restaurants or at certain events. And, you know, so I have firsthand experience with that, knowing the sensory overload that they're dealing with. I think we really cannot put ourselves in their shoes and really know that, but this story was an attempt to just give a glimpse into what they're experiencing, just one facet of sensory overload, which is just through sound and being in different situations, how that impacts them, and how HemPhotes can help. But really, I wanted to empower neurodivergent children that they, you know, should just be proud of who they are, that, you know, God made them who they are. I mean, it's not a faith-based book, but, you know, they were created beautiful the way they are, and they should be confident and not, I guess, succumb to any kind of comments or bullying. And, you know, and actually having written the book before, when I was, you know, just kind of announcing the topic, I actually had a friend come up to me and say that she knows of, she's so glad I wrote the book because she knows of some situations where the grandparents do not, you know, don't know why a kid's wearing headphones. And they're just like, oh, it's too much, you're being too much, why are you wearing that? And they give the kid a hard, their grandchildren, a child, a hard time about that. And I said, so we're really educating people across generations on really how to be just aware and sensitive to individuals who may need to wear them.
Yeah, and you know that sensory overload is a realistic challenge. How did you want to represent Hasman's experiences in crowded settings?
Well, these experiences are things that we've experienced personally. So I know that, you know, going to the fireworks show is not going to happen unless they have, you know, we have headphones. So I've seen, you know, I've use situations in real life to inspire the story. And of course, you know, I used the situation in school particularly to highlight the kids' reactions to it. Because really neurodivergent children are bullied at a much higher rate than their neurotypical peers. And something that, yes, sometimes the bullying theme, we see that in a lot of children's books. And you know, I understand that perhaps some editors might say, oh, well, it's overdone. But I'm like, well, no, it's not overdone. It's overdone for others. But what we need to highlight is neurotypical kids get it on another level. And so we need to highlight that and make people aware so that children, if this is read in a classroom, teachers read this in a classroom, all children will be understanding. And then can understand that this is something I shouldn't tease people in general, but you know, this is something I shouldn't tease someone about for wearing them all the time.
Yeah, and I saw that you are launching this book by like Kickstarter, I think. What led you to choose a crowdfunding route for this project?
Yeah, actually, so for each one of my books, I changed the launch strategy a little bit, and it's kind of me experimenting. So this is my first time trying Kickstarter. I wanted to try it as a kind of a first release, and I released it to my Kickstarter supporters a month ago, and they kind of had first dibs for, you know, supporting the project and helping bring it to fruition. So today, actually, it went live for everyone else on my store, on my bookstore, online bookstore, soundheartkids.store. You can go there, or soundheartkids.com. Headphones Hamza is now newly released for everyone else other than the Kickstarter supporters. So you'll find my hardcover and paperback there. And in a month's time, I will release it on Amazon and all the other major booksellers. But this is kind of a new approach I'm taking where I'm kind of staggering the release. Different locations.
Okay, so it's like just trying different strategies to see what happened, right? And sometimes the process is like that. You need to risk to see if you have like more success than the book before. And another question that I have, I know that every author faces hurdles and challenges. For you, what challenges did you encounter publishing or writing your first few books?
Yeah, I think The challenges I faced were, at first I wanted to publish traditionally, and I had spent many years studying craft and studying the business, the industry side of traditional publishing. But I think it was a really long road for me to come to the decision to self-publish. I was a little afraid, and that kind of held me back for a while. But then I stumbled upon this audiobook by Dean Wesley Smith. It's called, you know, Killing the Top 10 Sacred Cows of Self-Publishing. And that book, once I was done with it, I was like, that's it. I'm self-publishing. I'm not afraid anymore. I'm jumping right in. So I really think that the industries, when there's a problem, there's always a solution. And you can find that solution with research and hard work and trying to find different strategies to make things work. I know book marketing is tough, but ultimately it's the fear within that can hold a person back, particularly authors. I know we are in our own heads all the time, you know, like, is this good enough? Or, this fear of failure is something that, you know, we shouldn't have. We should try to overcoming. We should remind ourselves that really with hard work and research and tenacity and persistence, you really can accomplish anything you set your mind to.
Yeah, those ones are very helpful words for the ones who are like hesitating on publishing their first book, or do it, just try. And you know, on the flip side, what has been the most rewarding aspect of being an own writer so far?
It's just the children. When I have a child come up to me and say, I love your book, that it just makes my day. You know, because kids are very honest. I've had children come up to me and say, like, you know, do you like my book? They'd be like, I don't like your book. I'm like, okay, that's fine. I respect your opinion and I respect your honesty. So kids are very honest. So when I sometimes get parents texting me that their child sleeps with the book. Like some Samath Seed, the child wants to read it every single night and has to be tucked into bed with some Samath Seed, that they can see themselves in the books that they read. And this is why I with headphones, Hams also, like, I wanted to write literature that has some Muslim children represented, because they're really underrepresented in literature. And I wanted Muslim children to be able to see themselves in the book, as well as all children. So yeah, that's really the best part of the job, is the children. When I read to them, that just makes my day.
And you know, starting with debut books, can be intimidating. Like, what's one thing you wish you would know before publishing, like Samath Seed?
One thing I wish I knew. I think there's a lot of technological skills that are required. Technology skills for, at least for self-publishing. So I kind of wish I had brushed up on my social media skills and website building. I cannot tell you how many hours I spent just trying to learn all of that. So I think having those skills or brushing up on them, you know, even while you're in the process of publishing, if you're going to self-publish, that's really something I wish I could have done sooner.
Yeah, that's a good one. And also, there's any new projects that are coming in after, you know, Headphones, Hasma, there's anything that you can share with our listeners?
Yes, I'm working on a book series that is about Ramadan, a Ramadan book series. And this one will kind of be a Muslim faith-based book. So it's going to feature a brother and sister duo who each book will highlight a different aspect of Ramadan, and it will use actually verses from, it'll, each book will kind of focus on a verse or two from the Quran or a saying of the Prophet Muhammad that is centered around Ramadan. And I just kind of want to take in each one of those and making a whole fun, engaging story around that concept. So the first one of the books that's in production right now is called The Great Sahur Surprise. And it's about a little girl who wants to fast Ramadan with the rest of her family, but she's a huge sleepyhead and she can't wake up for Sahur. So, which is a morning, early pre-dawn breakfast. And she thinks it's a huge party. And so she's like, I'm missing out on the party. So it's definitely a funny one.
Yeah, that's a good one. And finally, where can listeners connect with you, order your books, or follow your last updates?
Yeah, you can follow the company at Sound Heart Kids on Instagram, or me on Instagram, Sarah Gawade. You can also find me at sarahgawade.com, or you can find the books at soundheartkids.com.
Thank you, Sarah. It has been a pleasure having you on Authors Radio. And thank you for giving us a glimpse into your work and sharing your passion. And listeners, be sure to check her books. Thank you for tuning in to Authors Radio, Amplifying Voices, Inspiring the World. Join me next time for another inspiring conversation. In the meantime, happy listening.
Thank you so much, Alba.